This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Ousted former Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi had his life sentence overturned by Egypt's top appeals court Tuesday on the second of three convictions. A death sentence against Morsi in another case was overturned last week pending a retrial. A third sentence for espionage has yet to be heard by the appeals court.
That's Edward Uranian reporting from Cairo. Details coming up.
Also, 3 years after the border was closed due to Boko Haram atrocities, Cameroon has reopened its border with Nigeria. And a new report shows that global casualties from landmines has hit a 10-year high.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, ousted former Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi has had his life sentence overturned by Egypt's top appeals court today on the second of his three convictions. A death sentence against Morsi in another case was overturned last week pending a retrial. A third sentence for espionage has yet to be heard by the appeals court, Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Sayyid Mahmoud Izzat Ibrahim Isa.
Egypt's top appeals court threw out the second of two life sentences given to former President Morsi Tuesday on an espionage conviction involving the Palestinian Hamas group. A death sentence against Morsi was overturned by the same court last week. Sentences for several associates were also quashed. The former president and his associates will be retried in the two cases that were overturned. He must still serve a 20-year sentence on a conviction for his role in the illegal torture and detention of protesters outside the presidential palace in 2012. The sentence in that case was confirmed earlier this year. Morsi was arrested after being ousted by the Egyptian military on June 30, 2013. He was detained after refusing an ultimatum to hold a popular referendum on his rule in the wake of large protests. The most serious charges against the former president involved transmitting secret government documents to the Gulf state of Qatar. Qatar was a close ally and supporter of Morsi and his Muslim Brotherhood group. Abdul Munam Abdul Maksoud, a lawyer for the now outlawed group, told the French news agency that he believes the appeals court decision Tuesday to quash the life sentence against Morsi and other Muslim Brotherhood leaders was fair, since the initial verdict was full of legal flaws. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq tells VOA that he thinks the softening of the punishment meted out to top Muslim Brotherhood leaders may be tied to the new international climate following the election of Donald Trump as the next U.S. president.
It also comes at a time when the government feels that they have been emboldened by the election of President Trump, so they feel now they are strong enough to do whatever they want, as long as it doesn't lead to any provocation.
Sadiq does not believe, however, that the series of retrials of top Muslim Brotherhood leaders will lead to an outright acquittal anytime soon.
The legitimacy of Sisi's regime depends on fighting terror. So releasing or acquitting Muslim Brotherhood leaders would be counterproductive to this strategy.
President Sisi has the right to pardon those convicted by the Egyptian judiciary, and some analysts have told VOA recently that they think the Muslim Brotherhood may be seeking some form of de-escalation with the government now that it feels that international developments are going against it. U.S. President-elect Trump has vowed to step up the fight against Islamic terrorism, and several of his close advisers have called the Muslim Brotherhood the mother of all terrorist organizations. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Cameroon has cautiously reopened its border with Nigeria, launching business activity 3 years after the border was closed due to Boko Haram atrocities. Cameroon officials say business with Nigeria has been relaunched because Boko Haram attacks have fallen off during the past 2 years. However, all business persons traveling to Nigeria and back must be screened and escorted. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Mora, northern Cameroon.
Hundreds of merchants have returned to the Limani border market in the far north region in Cameroon. They are once again selling and buying with their Nigerian peers. The Secretary General of Nigeria's Gambaringara market, Alhaji Bakari Balje, says they made the decision to reopen because Boko Haram attacks and atrocities have come to an end and they must restart business activity between the two countries.
Thank God that things will be okay now, because this place is a revenue-generating place for both Nigeria, Cameroon and Chad. And we can't allow room for maneuver just because of just small remnant of Boko Haram to exercise their power over us. Boko Haram have already been defeated. What remains is only remnant of it.
Midjiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, says endemic poverty and misery in the region, whose population is mainly merchants and farmers, will be reduced. But he says movement of people and goods will be controlled.
Les commerçants, les transporteurs nigériens partent aujourd'hui de Maiduguri jusqu'à...
He says merchants and transporters can now leave Maiduguri, the largest city of Nigeria's Borno State. He says he has instructed that systematic controls be carried out on every vehicle because he is aware that Boko Haram fighters may want to traffic arms and dangerous weapons. He says the opening of the border does not mean there is going to be the free movement of goods and people because there will be permanent controls. General Jacob Kodje, one of the commanders of Cameroon troops fighting the Boko Haram insurgency, says although the militants have not staged a full-scale attack with heavy weapons for about a year now, the military is ready to protect the population.
Le front est stable, il est calme. Nous, la frontière est encore intacte.
He says the border is stable under their care, and they are very vigilant following reports of many Boko Haram fighters escaping from the group and hiding in villages. He says 1 week ago, the insurgents attacked many villages and a few military positions, but no one was hurt or kidnapped, and that they did not even succeed in stealing. It is expected that with the opening of the border, business and other economic activity will be revived in the region, even though concerns about the lives and safety of the people still remain. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
A new report shows that global casualties from landmines has hit a 10-year high, while funding to clear the deadly devices has hit a 10-year low. The findings are part of the annual report of the International Campaign to Ban Landmines. According to the study, in 2015, over 6,400 people were killed by the weapons. That's a 75% increase from the year before. Jeff Abramson is the program manager of the Landmine and Cluster Munition Monitor and the editor of the report. VOA's William Eagle asked him what's behind the increase in casualties.
So there's multiple reasons for the increase in casualties. There is a 75% increase since last year and the highest number in a decade. Some of this is due to better data actually coming out of conflict zones. Data out of Syria and Libya was much improved, which gave us higher numbers. But there actually does seem to be an increased use in casualty caused by mines, in particular what we call improvised mines, which are also sometimes known as IEDs. But these act as mines when they're detonated by the contact of a person. And it seems to be that those types of weapons, which are mines, are now much more prevalent, especially in some of the Middle Eastern conflicts.
What about with regard to Africa? Are they still a danger in Africa as well? And are they being planted in new cases by groups or governments on the continent?
It's definitely still a problem in Africa. A number of countries have succeeded in clearing mines, but a number still have work to do. The new use is occurring in Africa. It's not as prevalent, I would say, as in the Middle East, but we do add non-state armed groups such as Boko Haram in Nigeria. We're using them. We also found some new use amongst fighting in Libya this year in northern Africa. So still a plague in Africa. Mentioned the new casualties are occurring outside of the African continent.
Your report says among the world governments that are planting or using landmines is Syria and Myanmar, and also non-state groups in Nigeria.
This treaty really is one of the most successful in the world. The stigma on the use of landmines remains strong. Only three countries, their government forces appear to be using landmines, and those are all countries that are not part of the treaty, and that's Myanmar, North Korea, and Syria. Outside of those countries, non-state armed groups in at least 10 countries are using landmines, sometimes factory-made ones, but more often improvised mines, and that's in 10 different countries, which is a similar number as last year. But the big change seems to be, especially the Islamic State, almost appears to have a factory production-type model for improvised mines, or sometimes called IEDs. That is new. You really are finding now, as countries are trying to reclaim land from the Islamic State, that they are essentially setting minefields and traps like we saw in the past with sort of more traditional mines.
The report also mentioned that there are claims that the governments of Cameroon, Chad, and Niger may be using landmines. Again, where do these claims come from, and can they be verified?
Allegations of new use are pretty common. A lot of the new ones are by non-state armed groups in countries. These are often media reports. Sometimes we'll be able to confirm later. It's often very difficult to get independent researchers in the ground to verify what was going on. So we might in a couple of years or next year or in the next couple of months be able to confirm. But until we have sort of proof of what is happening on the ground, we just list as allegations.
In Africa, which countries have made the most progress and which have made the least progress in clearing landmines?
Some of the countries in Africa that are making progress but still have a lot of contamination, which we consider to be at least 100 square kilometers, include Angola and Chad. Other countries with a little bit less but still significant work to do include Eritrea, South Sudan, Sudan, and Zimbabwe. A number of countries, though, have completed clearance in Africa, which is one of the signs of success of this treaty. Those include the Republic of Congo, Zambia, Malawi, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi, who have all completed clearance. We unfortunately had to relist Mozambique, which had completed clearance last year but has discovered a few more minefields. But many countries in Africa are struggling to complete clearance, but a number have made progress.
That was Jeff Abramson of the Landmine Monitor. He spoke with reporter William Eagle. Recently, French authorities closed a refugee camp in Calais, sending tens of thousands of migrants to official centers in other parts of the country. But thousands fled to the French capital. For the past several weeks, authorities in Paris have been working to make sure that the new arrivals have a warm shelter and food to eat as the winter months approach. Reporter Catherine Field explains how buildings in the various small towns around Paris are being turned into shelters as more migrants and refugees stream into France.
Various small towns around the Paris area have set up for them to be living in renovated gymnasiums or disused schools. They're also in various hostels around the capital. For example, the Salvation Army has taken in several hundred of them there at the hostel there. So the Paris authorities have got them inside. They've made sure that they're getting food. And they're also making sure that the process of the paperwork to apply for asylum or to apply for any other type of regularization of their situation is being done. This is always the big question, that yes, it's okay to bring them inside, to keep them warm, to keep them fed, to keep them safe, but you have to have that paperwork going through. Because as well as these 3,800 here in Paris, you've also got the French state looking after some 6,000 migrants who were moved out of what was known as the jungle camp in Calais. They are now in different areas around the country. On top of that, the French state is also figuring out what they're going to do with several thousand migrants who are camped in the area just north of Dunkirk, called Le Grand Saint. It's a migrant camp nearby to the port. It's pretty miserable up there, to be honest. It's cold, it's wet, the mud goes right up to your knees in the camp there. And it's really, as winter months come on, the French authorities are going to have to think again about what happens to these people. Certainly, the government has put aside quite a substantial amount of money to help these migrants. Already this year, they've allocated about 310 million euros for this, and they've put aside another 220 million euros to help the migrants next year. So they realize it's an ongoing situation, and they realize they really are just at the start of this process of sorting out the migrant flow that continues to come into France.
Are the majority of people coming in from sub-Saharan Africa?
There's been a bit of a change in the last year. About 90% of those who are coming into France come up through the Mediterranean route. Now, it has been people from Somalia, Eritrea in particular, and South Sudan that we've been seeing. But in the last couple of months, authorities say they've noticed more coming from countries such as Nigeria and from Guinea. So there's a bit of a change there. What they really do notice is it's that Mediterranean route that people are preferring to take rather than, say, coming up through Greece. What authorities are hoping is that as the winter months come across us and it gets far too cold, that the numbers will just fall away. That having been said, just within the last week, 370 people have died or gone missing taking that crossing over the Mediterranean. So for the moment, there are no indications that the numbers are dwindling.
Does the government have any concerns of money not being there in the future? I mean, how long do they intend on doing this?
They've already allocated an amount for 2017, but they will have to get that approved. The question is really going to be whether there's any protest from the French population themselves. France is like many other European nations at the moment. It's got your budget crisis, its economy is contracting, unemployment is still high. That is really going to be the problem, is when some of the smaller towns are asked to house, feed these migrants, whether there will be protests to say, look, we need to look after our own first. We've already seen cases of that in smaller areas in France. Whether that becomes more of an issue over the winter months is certainly of concern to the French government.
You earlier mentioned Calais, that there were still some people there. So are they in makeshift camps, or do they have some other type of shelter?
There are two types of shelters along that coast where, of course, the United Kingdom is just 20 miles away. There's the bigger camp at Le Grand Sainte, which is run by aid agencies. It does receive a lot of help from the local municipality. There are other more makeshift shanty towns along there. They're not receiving any help at all. They really are just migrants who have got, if they're lucky, tents and a sleeping bag. They hang out there during the day and then at night, under cover of darkness, try and jump on trucks that are heading for the port or are heading towards getting onto into the Channel Tunnel.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
As Greece struggles to cope with the refugees trapped within its borders, some are going the extra step to help. And for one man who has opened up his house for a Syrian family to live in, the refugee story is one that resonates particularly deeply. John Owens visits a Syrian family and their new host, whose grandparents themselves fled to Athens amid persecution.
For avid gardener Amar Othman, it is a reminder of the flowers he once cultivated and the home his family loved and fled, escaping the Syrian war. And in this suburb of Athens, thanks to this man, who has offered his apartment rent-free, it is also a symbol of Greek hospitality in a time of need. Like so many of the 50,000-plus refugees unable to leave Greece due to land border closures, Amar and his family were previously in a refugee camp here.
I feel so lucky, especially when I see my friends in the same situation, but they do not get a house. I got one, and I wish everyone else could so they are satisfied.
The family of Adonis Sangouris owns the building. He lives two floors up. Seeing the refugee crisis evoked memories of and their experience as refugees when they fled persecution in 1922 from a town in modern-day Turkey to come to Athens.
We decided that it might be good to offer this house to them in the memory of their grandparents.
The host gets on well with the Othmans, who like exploring their new neighborhood. The program that brought them together, named Home for Hope, is one of many seeking to give refugees waiting for asylum in Greece or be legally moved elsewhere into Europe a better standard of life. It has seen around 600 refugees move into apartments or rooms donated by people. And it is not just Amar who is a fan of this new life away from the camp.
There it was a mess and crowded. You could not do what you wanted to do. It was not good, not like our house now.
But uncertainty remains. Today, Amar's wife Nahid is too upset to appear on camera. Fresh clashes in their hometown have the family scanning their phones for news of loved ones in Syria. And with a new arrival to care for, they must wait to find out if they will be allowed to move elsewhere in Europe. Meanwhile, according to the organisation behind Home for Hope, more must be done in Greece to respond to the crisis.
The next steps is from our part to think long term and to implement projects that will integrate these people into our societies.
The future for refugees in Greece is opaque, but in this particular apartment at least, there is now hope. John Owens, VOA News, Athens.
The Arab African Summit is underway in Equatorial Guinea. Foreign ministers held preliminary meetings yesterday, and now heads of state have arrived in the country. Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe, Nigeria's Muhammadu Buhari, and Zambia's Edgar Lungu are among the African leaders in Malabo. The theme of the fourth Africa-Arab Summit is sustainable development and economic cooperation. Last year's summit was held in Kuwait.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee.